It's got a quorum. Representative Farnish moves the minutes from the February 8th meeting. Is there any discussion, or is everybody ready? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, carries. The first bill we'll do today is file number 116. Representative Atkins, I will move your bill, and my understanding is this doesn't go to any committees, that they want it on the floor soon, I had heard. So I'll move this one for passage and this one to go directly to the floor. And for members, this bill is here only because of lines 2.11 and 2.12. The rest of the issues are not in this committee. They were in the Commerce Committee. However, that creates a cause of action with a civil penalty, and therefore it had to come to this committee. So we are limited on this bill. We're going to get bills probably later on coming from Commerce that are much more hard to figure out which part pertains, but this one clearly is just this one sentence that we can discuss in this committee. So with that, Representative Atkins, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is my maiden voyage between the newly constituted, or before the newly constituted Public Safety Committee. I'm happy to be here. I will focus my comments on the two lines, literally the penalty that Chair Mullery pointed out. Before that, I'll give a brief overview of the bill. The bill is House File 116. It's commonly known as the call center bill. It essentially just requires that if you operate a call center abroad, that you need to tell the truth. If a customer, a consumer asks where you are calling from, you have to tell them where you're calling from, either the state or the country that you're in. Secondly, it requires that you, if there is a financial place, if they're requiring private information, either credit, financial, medical records, and they have a place in the United States for you to send your private information, that they have to tell you where that is so you can send it there instead. That's all that the bill does. In terms of the penalty provision that I know is your concern, it allows for an action under, I believe the section is 325F.69. That's the fraud statute. What it provides for is if there is an intentional violation, then you have the remedies available under the fraud statute. Generally, that's enforced by the Attorney General's office. But there are also private remedies in the form of civil damages to which people can be entitled. That's what the bill does, and with that, we had testimony in other committees regarding other elements of the bill, but not with regard to the penalty. I think everybody is in agreement on both sides of this issue with regard to the penalty. With that, I'll stand for questions or concerns.
We've got a lot of controversy. Both sides agree on it, finally, on this provision, not on the whole bill. But is there any discussion of the bill? Since everybody's in agreement? If there's no discussion, I guess not seeing anyone. Okay, Representative Atkins, you got peace in the valley today.
At least with
like under the old David's committee. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. Carries. You are out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You escaped.
Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. The next bill is Representative Paymer. Do you have somebody who took off work for this, or
Mr. Chair? They did. They did Tuesday, and they couldn't take off today, so I don't have a witness today.
Okay. The next bill would be Representative Johnson's bill. If there's, you don't have anybody that. Is
it's staff.
Okay. He's got staff too. Representative Johnson, I guess you're next. And Chris, I think you're on this bill.
Okay.
Representative Johnson, do you want to move your bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. I would like to move this bill. I think it's almost non-controversial enough to go to the consent calendar.
I don't
general calendar.
Think we're going to the consent calendar yet. I think it'd be to the general register. Or I think it would be to, is there a fiscal, state fiscal impact on this one? Okay, it would be for, it would be layover for the omnibus crime bill from this committee then that you're on. So that would be the motion then.
Very good.
Okay.
Proceed?
Representative Johnson, proceed, yes. Sorry.
Okay. Well, this is a pretty simple bill we have before us, Mr. Chair and committee members, and what it does amend provisions about how Ramsey County operates its correctional facilities. I have with me today a spokesperson from the Community Corrections Department of Ramsey County, as well as the superintendent of the facility to my left here. And I'll let them just briefly walk through the two changes. One changes corrects the language of good time so it reflects what's actually occurring in the Ramsey County facility. The other deals with changing the compensation rate for per diem. That, I'll turn over to Mr. Crutchfield here, and he can go into it a little further.
Mr. Crutchfield, welcome back to the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You helped me a lot my first year here, so welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead and proceed.
Representative Mulroney is referring to the fact that I was committee administrator about 10 years ago for the Civil Law Committee, so I'm glad to be back. This bill, House Bill 367, is simply attempting to bring 383A, which is the statute that deals directly with Ramsey County corrections, into compliance with other counties and with other Minnesota law. The subdivision 6, which we're looking to amend, the first part, has been unchanged since 1974, and it deals with diminution of sentences, also known as good time. And the old calculation was 5 days for every 30-day sentence. In 1991, the legislature changed that to one-third good time, and they forgot to change it. It looks like, it appears that they forgot to change it in 363A, and so we're just asking that we reflect that and that we have one-third good time just like the rest of the state. The second provision deals with inmates who have who are sentenced in other counties. In other words, people who are convicted outside of Ramsey County but who want to do their time inside of Ramsey, in the Ramsey County Correctional Facility. And as 383A reads right now, in order for them to do that, they have to pay the actual per diem cost, which is about $90 a day. How that shakes out is if someone lives in St. Paul or lives in Ramsey County and they commit a crime up in Bemidji or somewhere and they want to do their time in Ramsey County to keep their job or stay close to their families, they're allowed to do so, but they're charge the actual per diem rate of $90 a day, which they can't afford. We want the ability in times of low occupancy to be able to negotiate down on that.
Representative Johnson, is your other witness just for questions, or is he?
Yeah, he's just basically here for questions. Do you want to say anything? Questions are fine.
Mr. Representative Crutchfield, I've never known you to stop talking so quick. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. Why would you want the taxpayers of Ramsey County to be subsidizing other inmates?
Why would we want to have more
taxpayers of Ramsey County to be subsidizing other inmates? Why would you give your services at a discounted rate?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, would you like to? I'll let the superintendent answer that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Many of the costs at a correctional facility are fixed, regardless of the number of inmates that you have in the facility. So by charging, so our actual costs are substantially lower often than what the calculated per diem would be, which would include, utilities, depreciation on the facility, things like that. so the actual cost would be substantially lower. And we actually see this as an opportunity to bring in revenue to offset those costs, because people who would otherwise not afford to be able to come to Ramsey County and do the time when we have low occupancy would be able to.
Representative Hulbert, do you have a follow-up?
Well, no, I'm surprised that they would allow outsiders to come in their jail at a discount rate at the cost of the taxpayers of Ramsey County.
Well, I'm just guessing, but it would seem to me, Representative Hulbert, they're actually doing better if they do that than if they don't get them there because of the fixed costs. Is that correct, or Representative Johnson? Or
yeah, that's correct, Mr. Chair. For example, if we had we're expanding our facility right now, and if we had some extra room there, for example, to take on someone from, let's say, Washington County if they were overcrowded, rather than charging 89, we could reduce it to 60, would make it more attractive for them to utilize our facility. We'd still make the money on it, the county would, but
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. Are you going to have the highest per diem rate in the state for county jails with your new facility? What do other counties charge?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Johnson.
That I don't know. Maybe Superintendent might know.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what the actual per diems. I do know that we are one of the highest at $90 a day, substantially higher than most other counties.
Let's see. Next is Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, just help me. I think I understand what you're doing here on Subdivision 6. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that Ramsey County is the only county right now that doesn't have the one-third good time ability? I live in Carver County, so if the Carver County wants to get some folks out of their jail, they can credit one-third good time, but Ramsey County can't. Am I understanding that right?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coles, that is correct. And actually, Ramsey County has been following the 10 days for 30 days for a while, but we do want to make it reflect what's actually going on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm glad to know Ramsey County is looking to correct its unlawful behavior.
Well, Representative Coles, you weren't here when Mr. Crutchfield was here, so we know. No. Very, very great employee. Representative Vimmer.
Thank you. This is probably for the superintendent, but Representative Johnson can answer it if he knows. It almost sounds like because of the business proposition, we're running the Gray Bar Motel. Are you going to be advertising this to other counties? How do you propose to, are you going to be putting out brochures? How are we going to do this?
Mr. Carlson.
Not at this time. At this time, we were at capacity or over capacity. As Mr. Johnson or Commissioner Johnson, I'm sure Representative Johnson stated, we are adding on. There may be excess capacity in the future, in late 2008 or beyond. And if there is, we may look at options for leasing beds to other agencies.
Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair and Richard Merritt, it's also, I think, good to know that all the other counties have this flexibility, and Ramsey County wants to have the same flexibility to deal with the fluctuating capacity within the institution to serve as best.
Representative Emmer, do you have a follow?
I do, Mr. Chairman. So, Representative Johnson, what do the other counties do? What do the other correctional facilities do? Do they advertise? We have space, and we've got a discount rate this week. How do you do this if you're selling jail space?
Mr. Crutchfield? Mr. Chair, Representative, the way it works is kind of on an individual-by-individual basis. If someone is a Ramsey County resident, or there is a transition program, or their job is close to Ramsey County, that's when they think about the option of actually doing their time in Ramsey County. It's not that they have to come out of pocket themselves and pay instead of the other county paying, but it's usually for the purpose of doing work release or staying close to their family or a good CD or transition program, which is Ramsey County. And there's a public policy interest there, we believe, too.
Representative Felstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that currently right now we have a number of counties that because they get short-term offenders from the state, they now already have to lease bed space because they are currently full and they are often looking for a place to put them at a reasonable price. And so this may be a great asset to some of the outstate counties that currently don't have space.
Representative Coles.
Well, Mr. Chair, the discussion is kind of fascinating. I was aware that there are facilities out there leasing bed space, but Representative Emmer, I was chatting with Representative Holbrook here. I think you're on to something, and I think there's a great business opportunity. We could do prisonbeds.com or prisonosity.com. The counties could. I think Representative Emmer, you should look to make a little profit on this.
Is there any other real discussion about this bill? Representative Westrom.
Well, I'm not sure who this would be pertaining to, Mr. Chair, but there was a bill introduced earlier this week or last week that would prohibit the state from contracting with a private prison, and yet the testimony I just heard was there's overcrowded bed space. Does that mean we probably, as a state, shouldn't limit our options?
I'm not sure if that's a rhetorical question.
Well, no, Mr. Chair. If we're short of bed space, is that true or not? I guess
is it true that Ramsey County is short of bed space? Or I guess I don't know who to answer this.
Mr. Chair, I probably could answer this question. I think it's about my bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I currently have a bill banning the use of private prisons and correctional facilities in Minnesota, and so I think that that is the question that this is about. Currently, we are overcrowded, and we do currently rent almost 1,000 beds from a private correctional facility just for state prisoners. But, yes, there is an overcrowding, and we probably need a plan, and that's the reason for my bill. So.
Seeing no more hands, I guess everybody's ready to vote on your bill finally, Representative Johnson, which you told me would take 5 minutes. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Carries. Representative Tamar, number 425.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a procedural question. Typically, in the committees that I've been serving on, when we're laying something over for possible inclusion,
yes.
We don't vote. So
I'm
my
sorry.
Question was, if we voted, if we're going to automatically put it in, or what are we doing?
I apologize, Representative Hellstrom. I was carrying over from the first bill. And you're right. This was just, I'm sorry, the chair lays this over. I apologize. I did that once before already this year, and you corrected me on it. So I'll try and learn one of these times.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Warming up.
All right,
I'm out of
here.
Representative Paymer, you have Bill 425.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I have an amendment, which is the 425A2, so I would like to move that.
Representative Paymer has moved the A2 bill, and that's my understanding, is just to get it in the shape that you want it, which is customarily done, so I assume that there's no objections. The A2 amendment? Okay. Then, without any objections, then we go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess the motion that I'll make after introducing the bill and after discussion would be that the House File 425 be passed and be referred to the Public Safety Finance Committee. When I explain the bill, I think it'll become obvious why it needs to go there. Mr. Chair and members, this
This bill attempts to correct the problem and I think provide some justice to crime victims.
Go ahead, Representative Kane.
To crime victims in the state of Minnesota. It was actually brought to me by a constituent, and then subsequently there was a news story about it in the Pioneer Press, and I've received several emails and phone calls from constituents around the metropolitan area. And basically the situation is this, is that, let's say, for my constituent who was hoping to be here, is very passionate about this issue, her car, her son's car was stolen in front of her house in my district in one of my neighborhoods, the Highland Park area, and they called the police, and they didn't know where it was. Several days later, the police called and basically said that the automobile had been towed. It was in the St. Paul impound lot. They went down there to get the car, and they were told, I can't remember exactly the price, but they ended up having to pay like $250 to get the car out of the impound lot. So she was obviously up in arms. She called me and said, you know, why should I have to pay? I was a victim of crime. My son was a victim of crime. He didn't do anything. The car doors were locked. He wasn't irresponsible, but had to pay this impound lot fee. And so I did some research and found that this has been a long-standing issue in the legislature. In fact, this issue goes back to Representative Skoglund tried to rectify this by having a bill that would essentially waive the impound lot fees, but turned out that the impound lot owners, that many of them are private owners, as well as some of the cities, were very upset about, you know, the possibility and the revenue they would lose and the cost that they would endure. So what I am trying to do here is to remedy the problem by expanding our existing emergency grant program that's funded through the Office of Justice programs. The current emergency grant program, and I'm going to ask my witness, Jennifer Nodes, who is the executive director of the General Crimes Victim Coalition, to speak about it, but the current emergency grant program provides assistance to crime victims for replacing broken windows and doors, installing security devices, transportation needs to the court, to the hospital, or to clean up crime scenes. So this bill basically makes a reimbursement for impound fees something that a crime victim could apply for in their county to be reimbursed. You can also, if you also would see in the amendment that we lowered the cap from $500 to $300, so the maximum amount of money that you could possibly claim would be $300 if your car was stolen. So I have a few more comments, but I think I'd like Ms. Nodes at least to talk about the policy behind this bill.
I'm sorry. Representative Kumar, Ms. Nodes?
It's actually Notice, please.
Notice? Okay, sorry.
It's a nickname.
Go ahead, Ms. Notice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. Thank you for having me speak today on this issue. To put a face on auto theft, I'd like to just paint a scenario for you. A 67-year-old woman lives in rural Minnesota with her daughter and with her two grandchildren. She owns a vehicle and uses that vehicle to bring her daughter to work and to bring one of her grandchildren to school. One particular day, she drops off her daughter at work. She drops off one child at school, and she takes the other young child with her to the grocery store. She goes in, gets her groceries, comes out, and her car is gone. The child doesn't understand what's going on. The child's confused. Grandmother, she's overwhelmed. The groceries sit on the parking lot, and the police arrive. Police take a report. She has no transportation. The police officer brings her home. She contacts her daughter, who fortunately can get a ride home from work. She contacts the school, finds a friend who can bring home the granddaughter. She contacts her insurance company, who tells her, due to your limited coverage, we can't help you with any of the costs. Here we are, we have an individual who is depending on her vehicle for a number of things. and doesn't have any recourse. She lives in rural Minnesota, which means that there's no light rail, there's no taxis, there's no buses. The closest car rental service may be over an hour away. Her daughter must stay home from work until she can arrange for alternative planning, and the granddaughter has to miss school until they can arrange for further transportation. A day later, she receives a phone call. Their car's been found in Minneapolis, and it's in the impound lot. She contacts a friend who is able to give her a ride down to Minneapolis, which is several hours away, to pick up her car. It's 3 days later, and when she gets there, she finds out that she must pay the $138 towing fee and then the $18 a day for the 3 days that the car sat there, for a complete total of $192. Be it that she's on a limited income, she doesn't have $192 to pay, so she uses a credit card. By the time you add interest on it, she's paid over $500 just to retrieve her car. Is it realistic? Absolutely. Victims of motor vehicle theft, already having dealt with the initial consequences, are shocked to find the news that a recovered vehicle comes with. Good news, we found your car. Bad news, you need to pay to get it out. OJP, or the Office of Justice Program, who funds the program that disperses funds for emergency services, has a crime victim justice unit who hears some of the frustrations of victims, and they've heard over and over again that this is an area of frustration. Some other examples, or real examples rather than the scenario, is that a victim whose car was severely damaged by thieves decided to leave his car in the lot because the tow fees and the expenses for having it in the impound were greater than what he felt the actual value of the car was. So he left it there. When he was contacted later by the city, who said, we'll be able to recover those tow fees when we get your tax refund. Another victim complained to the justice unit that she couldn't afford the impound fee and the loan on her vehicle, and so she left it in there. And what she found was that the city turned over her vehicle to her creditor. And then still another victim, whose car was stolen by her friend's son and used in the commission of a crime, was required to pay the impound fee and as well the storage fee for all days in which the vehicle was held, and that included days in which it was being examined for evidence. Is this a realistic problem? Absolutely. But it's more than just an inconvenience. The victim suffers from increased transportation costs, whether it be from finding alternative transportation or the use of a rental car, often which isn't covered under your insurance policy. It results in increased travel time after they figure out how to use public transportation if available, or if having to carpool with others to get to work and other things. It increases their time that they need to miss work. Usually it takes an average of 1 to 5 days of missed work to resolve the issue. And the victim also suffers increased credit card debt, typically, in trying to pay the fees to get their car out. It's not just the initial victim also who suffers these consequences, it's secondary victims. As my example gave it to light, people are dependent on others for rides, whether it be to just work, school, or even to a medical appointment. Sometimes others are dependent on an individual who provides daycare services, and this is lost by the loss of a car. So I do not doubt that the legislator takes this issue seriously. There's been bills passed in the past to address the issue. Law enforcement are now required to inform victims within 48 hours if their vehicle has been impounded, giving them a shorter time that they have to worry about their vehicle being charged $18 a day. There's also a law that protects victims in the event that the car was impounded as a result of a traffic citation, as long as they can show verification that the vehicle was stolen, they don't have to pay it. And then, of course, the legislator has given money to the Auto Theft Prevention Grant. But despite all of these changes, what we find in the research is that 95% of victims of auto theft still feel that there was no assistance in any way, shape, or form after their vehicle was stolen. So I urge you to pass this bill, to pass the proposed legislative changes so that they can be reimbursed in a timely manner and that they're not victimized again.
Representative Westrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few comments just to, first of all, what the witness says, Mrs. Notice, seems to be right on with the victims of a car theft. A friend of mine had her car stolen in Minneapolis a few years ago, and she was just astounded by how complicated it was for her to even get her car back when she actually went and found it for the police and told them to go get it, and then they tow it away. When she knows where it is, she could have just gotten in the car and driven it home. Messed up as it was, they'd cut and slid all the cushions and stuff, but I wonder if we should even look at a different policy that maybe the cops would call the victims and they could leave it where it's at for a day or two. They'd probably be there in a moment to pick it up rather than go through all this expense of calling a tow truck and hauling it someplace where people now have to pay several hundred dollars. So, Representative Paymire, I agree with your bill. I'm just wondering if there's a cheaper way to do this, and I would rather see us support something like you were talking originally that's been tried before, but at a minimum, it should be part of the cost of a crime. I mean, the county and state, we're paying for law enforcement and public safety. There's lots of costs that go with it, and this sure seems to be, but one of them that should be not bore by the victim, but secondly, I think we should look at changing policy to have the police officers or the dispatchers back in the office. They run the license plate. They know whose car it is. They got a phone number. Just call them up and say, "Hey, we found your car downtown Minneapolis. Here's where it's at. If you can come and get it right away, we can avoid having to haul it to impound." I just don't see why we shouldn't look at more common sense solutions like that, but if we're going to, in fact, have them keep towing these cars away, and in the case I started off with, I mean, she actually wanted to get her car and take it, and they made it go through impound on the way to her getting it, which was just ridiculous. They didn't find it. She actually found it in the neighborhood and then called the cops and told them where it was, and the witness is right. Victims feel the process is absolutely out of whack, and I think we could streamline it even further, and I think we should try to do that rather than just spend more money on it. But Representative Paymire, what is the cost projected on this bill? And secondly, is there a means test? If somebody makes $100,000 and their car is stolen, are they going to get this, or is it just going to be the person that might be considered poor, or do we give it to everybody in fairness?
Representative Paymire?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there were several questions there. Representative Lester, I'll try to take a stab at them all. I did inquire to the about the issue of law enforcement and trying, you know, there is that provision in law about notifying within 48 hours. Part of the problem is that sometimes you don't find the car for periods of time. I mean, it could be anywhere and in a totally different jurisdiction. The issue that I heard, and maybe staff could address this, Ms. Pyrus, because you did some research on the bill, I think there were some liability questions that the police kept, and I don't know if Representative Cornish has to shed any light on this, but there were liability issues about getting that car out of the neighborhood in a timely manner. So if you didn't get down there immediately, your car was gone. But Ms. Harris, if you want to just respond to this part, and then I'll respond to the money parts, Representative Wessner.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Paymire is correct. I contacted the police in a couple different cities, and it's a liability issue. If the person can't come pick it up right away, the police are liable for that car, and they would have to have someone watch the car until it's picked up. So that was the reason.
Thank you. And then the Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, the money issue. This really is the crux, and this is the policy committee, and that's why I'm asking it to be referred to the finance committee, because originally, with all good intention, I had thought that the auto theft prevention fund would be a perfect link to fund this new emergency program or this additional emergency program. Those of you who have been around for a while, Representative Holbrook, you probably remember this when the legislature took $1.5 million out of the fund and put it in the general fund to make up the deficit. So ever since then, I think that, it's clear to me that prosecutors and law enforcement, as well as the insurance industry, has been concerned about what the legislature has done with that fund. I met with Bob Johnson. He couldn't be here today, and he's very interested in trying to look at some language to capture some of that $1.5 million that was really siphoned away from this. This, the auto theft prevention fund, comes from a surcharge on your auto insurance, and it was geared specifically for communities to do stings and try to prevent auto theft. So I thought there was a good link. Mr. Johnson thinks there's a good link, but he's concerned that we're taking, that this bill could potentially take even more out of it, and we won't be able to do some of the things that local jurisdictions need to. The other reason I want this re-referred is I don't have the fiscal note is not completed yet, so I don't know how much this will actually cost. We did cap the money, the award at $300 rather than $500. Ms. Notis could probably speak to this better, but this is a form that you would have to fill out with your at the county attorney's office of a crime victim advocate, and you'd have to state here that you're not getting. This was one of the concerns that we were talking about is that if you have comprehensive car insurance, it's possible that they may reimburse you. So we don't want people. I don't know how many people would, but applying for the grant and then getting reimbursed from their insurance company. So, but if you have liability insurance, you're obviously not going to get reimbursed from your insurance company. But this form would require you to state that you are not getting other sources to get reimbursed for this crime. So I hope I'm answering your question there. I don't know how much it will cost. I can tell you how many cars are stolen. We don't know how many people would actually go to the trouble of applying for the grant. Some of the cars that are stolen are processed for evidence. Some of the cars are never recovered. So we just don't know at this point. So the amendment to the bill would take the money out of the general fund, and we'll just have to see when it gets to the Finance Committee whether there's resources to do this or not, or as Mr. Johnson from the insurance industry, if he can come up with something that might be helpful.
Next is Representative Hallberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymer, I have been in the auto theft prevention wars over the years, and some of them were fun and some of them were not so fun, but I liked your bill before the amendment. I think this is a valid use of that fund, and that money just continues to grow year after year after year, and money's hard to come by around this place. But at the very least, I think that Tory made some really good points, and I think that you could do in your legislation, you could direct the Auto Theft Prevention Board to look at utilizing the resources. We've spent hundreds of millions of dollars putting together electronic databases in the state. This is one area where the average consumer could actually benefit, the law-abiding consumer could actually benefit from the readily available information, and that when a car was reported missing, that could be tagged, and there could be a certain set of criteria based on these cars tagged as stolen by tow truck operators, etc. The tow truck operators have access to the DVS information in order to contact people regarding towing cars. Certainly law enforcement has that access, and I don't see that it would be a major problem for us to look at some legislation that would require some initial contact of the vehicle owner before the towing's made. I mean, if the car is 10 blocks away and not a hazard to anything, the liability issues as they currently stand, that issue could be addressed as well by a waive of the liability by the owner of the car in order to not incur the hundreds of dollars. So, I mean, I think you can do more here to actually make a difference and make this process work, but it's very, very easy now with the new electronic databases for that car to be tagged as stolen, and for the tow truck operator to know it, the law enforcement official to know it, and be able to contact the car owner at the time that car is located before all these costs begin to you know, ramp up. So, I mean, I think you got a good start here, but I think that you can really get at some of the root problems without it costing a bunch of money and help people get their cars back quicker.
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, at least from what we're hearing from the crime victims. Ms. Notice, I don't know if you want to respond. It's not always so easy for law enforcement, and I don't know if the towing industry would you know, where the money would come for. You know, I think it's complicated what you're suggesting, but I'm certainly open to some language to making this work.
And Mr. Chair, to that point, I mean, if I had a stolen car from Lakeville and somebody called me and said, your car is on, you know, 30th and Garfield, can you come get it in the next two hours and save yourself $250, you know, it appears to be intact, I, as a consumer, would make every effort to do that. As opposed to being told.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I'm sure that most consumers do. The problem is that they're not always notified. I believe that the statute, and Ms. Pierce, maybe you'd like to shed some light on this, that if at all practical, something like that, law enforcement must contact the individual. I'm sure it just it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction on how rapidly that happens. So all of a sudden you wake up or you hear that your car's already been impounded. Those are the crime victims that we're trying to focus on with this grant. But this is a sort of a working project process, and I would be happy to.
Well, Representative Holberg, I know that in Minneapolis the police are so busy they couldn't keep somebody there for 2 hours even to watch the car.
But Mr. Chair, again, if the car owner wanted to waive that liability as an option of avoiding all the additional costs, you give them the choice. I think you can work on this so that you don't have so many $300 costs, I guess is what I'm saying, that we now have technology that we should be using it to benefit the consumers that are paying all this money for this technology. Here's an instance where it could actually benefit them.
I believe Ms. Notice wanted to make a comment or
Notice.
Response to the...
I guess my only caution on that in your suggestions would be to be careful on how much responsibility we're placing on the victim. If they do receive a phone call from law enforcement and they decide I'm not going to leave my home at this moment and go retrieve my car, what are going to be the consequences of that behavior? And would they be punished then and be responsible for the full amount of the impound if they weren't able to get there fast enough?
Representative De La Forest and then Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Representative Pema. I guess I had three questions. The first one, Representative Pema, how would this work? Practically, and I apologize for not being here earlier, perhaps you explained it in the introduction of your bill. If I'm a victim and I'm called and told that, Classy Joe's impound lot has got my vehicle and I can come and get it, would I front the money and then apply for a grant for reimbursement? Or how would it practically work for the victim? What would they do to get grant money?
Representative Paymeyer? Ms. Norris?
Mr. Chair, committee. Both are available options, as far as I understand how the reparations fund works. You can front the money and then seek reimbursement similar to an insurance policy, or if you want to wait and delay, then you can try to get a grant. Reparations can work quite quickly, but then we're talking about if we are, and I'm not sure if you caught this part, at least in Minneapolis you pay $18 a day, so it's something that needs to be turned over rather quickly.
Mr. Chair, maybe you weren't here, Representative De La Forest. I talked about this form that you have to fill out at your local county attorney's office or your crime victim advocate's office in your county attorney's office, and this is how you would apply for an emergency grant to just like you would for any other emergency grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow, I'm trying to reconcile the need for a speedy turnaround with my knowledge of how inept government can be in acting in a timely fashion, and a number of things. These charges generally accrue daily,
And I'm just wondering how a victim keeps up with that. I mean, they may think that their charge is going to be $150 and submit the paperwork, and by the time the grant turns around, another 10 or 15 days have passed, and now their $150 charge has become $300. I mean, how do we, in other words, you know, how do we beat the cycle of the timeliness issue in terms of the way charges normally accrue for recovering a vehicle? Because if I don't have 10 bucks to my name, I'm in a lot of trouble if my grant is for a dollar less than what I need.
Representative Paymer, do you want
someone from the OJP office at DPS can respond?
Do you want to come down, Karen? Ms. Eller?
Hello, I'm Karen Eller from the Department of Public Safety, Chair and Committee. What you're talking about, this would come out of the emergency fund. The emergency fund is set up differently, and it is given to programs to administer who can turn around in 24 hours. So if you were a victim of car theft, you could go in, talk to the victim advocate, and then they would be able to give you money or reimburse you in a 24-hour period.
Representative LaForce, do you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up. So is the grant money given to the victim in the form of a check made out to the victim or cash, or is it a check that is cut to the one who possesses the car, the impound lot?
Well, right now, since that currently isn't a practice of the emergency fund, that would have to be determined by the Office of Justice Program grant administrator. And in that situation, most likely they would cut the check directly to the impound lot, because they would know where the car was and have that information.
Right. I think, Mr. Chairman, just to comment that would be a better way to go, I would think, for the chief author, if we can make sure that the money is spent for the appropriate purpose. And, Mr. Chairman, for might I just had one more question for Representative Paymer. Thank you. Regarding, I think it's, let me see here, on 4.21 regarding proof of insurance, I'm thinking of a hypothetical situation real quick. My car got stolen, but it got stolen because I was dumb. I left my car running when I went into the Super America to get a pack of cigarettes. How do you intend, or how would you prevent somebody from applying for $300 to get their car back when they really probably deserve to have their car stolen, as opposed to a person who's truly a victim who had their car secured, locked, and somebody smashed the window and hot-wired it?
I would
draw a line between the two.
Representative LaForest, I guess I grew up in a different world than you, that people should expect to have their car stolen if it's turned on. Representative Paymer?
Mr. Chair, no, I think it's a legitimate question, and I'm not sure that I have a good answer for you. I suspect that they probably could. I think, you know, people use and abuse the system all the time. I don't know that there's any safeguards that we have in the bill, or if it's possible to put something in the bill or on the application form that maybe says if you did something stupid, you can't.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Paymer. I was just wondering if when the police do haul up, you know, a vehicle of this nature, does it always go to the same lot, or does it go to other lots on a rotational basis? And the reason I'm asking that is it's adding insult to injury, because in some cases when the car is towed, I understand that it will be taken to a lot where, and the person in this victim wouldn't know that, and it would be at the spot, and the only way you can get your car back is by cash. They don't take plastic, they don't take checks, but they have a convenient ATM right next to you. Unfortunately, the cost might be $280, and the ATM will only give you $200. So I'm just curious whether the police bring it to places that you earlier were talking about, $160 or maybe $200, but apparently there are places that can charge differently, and it would be more difficult for these victims.
Representative Paymer?
I think maybe Becky, you know. Ms. Pierce? I don't know. I can speak to St. Paul, where some of this was some of these problems were generated, at least how I got involved, and there's only one impound lot as far as I know in St. Paul. I guess it would just depend on the jurisdiction, on where the car was stolen, or where the I really don't have an answer for you.
Representative Bigham, did you have a to this point?
I think we're going to say the same thing. So.
Mr. Chair?
Is that to this point?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead.
First, I'm going to disclose that I won't be voting on this bill because my family has been in the towing business for a very long time. So in the event that you do have questions, many cities do contract with local towing companies. And so, for example, the City of Brooklyn Center that I represent contracts with 3 towing companies, but they set a set price. Each of the private towing companies have to charge the same price for a police tow. One of the challenges, Representative Holberg, as well, that many of the police departments have is many of these cars that are stolen, the ignition is punched, and so you can't leave them on the side of the street because they'll just be stolen again. Maybe the windows are broken out of it or whatever, and it becomes a hazard. So if you have any other questions, I'm happy to help in any way I can, but I won't be voting on these proposals.
Representative Saylor, did you have a follow-up?
No, I was adding to the fact that, you know, these people would be in further trouble if they happen to have the bad luck to be taken to a certain lot as opposed to a different one, and it just kind of points up the need for some help for them.
Representative Coles.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymar, I like what you're getting at with your bill here, and I guess in the spirit of trying to make a good bill better, and that's what I'm all about, Representative Paymar, I'm hoping that you'll consider as this moves forward. You mentioned during your testimony that you know, one of your concerns is that somebody with comprehensive coverage who may have coverage for the fees not kind of double dip or get into the program. I would challenge that and say that, you know, somebody who might have comprehensive coverage for whatever reason they do, they have a brand new car or whatever, they're still a victim. Mm-hmm. And I know that if my car is stolen and I happen to have comprehensive coverage right now on my lovely 2004 Taurus, but I don't want to have to make a claim to my insurance company necessarily for $300. I've been a victim as well if my car is stolen, and so I guess in the spirit of making a good bill better, Representative Hammer, as this moves forward, I hope you would consider that and see if there's a way that we can take care of anybody who's the victim of auto theft.
Representative Kelstrom, did you want to speak? You're next on the list.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative,
I think that that's a legitimate issue. I hadn't really thought about it. I just for the committee's edification, I not all comprehensive insurance pays for impound lot fees, so it's
Representative Lash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mostly a comment with respect to what Representative Westrom and what Representative Holberg stated. With respect to efficiency in the system, I think it'd be really nice if we could avoid some of the all the way up to the top impound lot back down and avoid some of the problems that would occur. And in fact, it'd be nice if we could find a way to do that to aggregate some of the needs for people to dip into this fund. My concern is at the same time that the folks that we're placing the burden on, and the comment was made that, you know, government is kind of inept and here we have to go through this long process to do this, but remember, the government we're talking about here are police officers. And I know that going on as many ride-alongs as I have with police officers, with what they're having to consider at that location at the time, When they're picking up a vehicle that's been stolen, crime's completed and done, all police officers do in St. Paul is respond to calls. And if you're waiting to get to a domestic assault call, perhaps with a perpetrator not on arrival or something like that, you need to get to that next call. And it's exactly what the officers are going to say on this point is, really, you really want us to hang around and wait for the person to come and pick up this car? Because, I mean, I know I would. I'd like to get there. But the police officers are going to have a real problem with that. That said, I also have the same concerns that Representative Holberg and Representative Westrom had, so I hope, even though it's kind of a side issue to your bill, it can impact how much is drained out of that fund. So I just wanted to make that point.
Well, and Mr. Chair?
To that point?
Yeah, to that point. I mean, Representative Hilstrom talks about the ignition being punched. I don't think it's a big difference between the cops calling ABC Towing or the owner of the car. If they call me, I say, I want Protect Auto to come tow the car to my body shop and get it fixed, then I only have one tow thing. If the car is damaged, the cops still have to wait around for ABC towing to bring it to the impound lot, and then I'm still going to have to pay that tow plus an additional tow to get the car from the impound lot to the body shop. So, I mean, I think we can work on this.
Well, Representative Holder, I would guess there's usually quite a bit different time on the amount of time between the one that the police would call and the others, possibly, if you were able to choose your own. But next is Representative Cornish.
Well, my original question was about something else, but I'll get back to that. I would just ask you, just go through the process. Don't do anything that encumbers police anymore in the R. Somehow take them out of the equation, because if they have to sit, and there's so many variables. I mean, this thing could have been used in a crime, and they're not going to let it go. They could seize it for evidence. It could be bungled up and not drivable. I mean, there's so many different things that could happen here that it's going to cost our police if they get involved in that process. But I'll tell you about my own traumatizing experience here. That your bill can be made much better, first by making it retroactive and then adding a clause that if it says it was towed away from the Kelly M parking lot. I get into the Kelly M late at night, and I go up to my room, and I lay down on the bed and forget that I didn't park my car when I unloaded it, and I leave it right in the fire lane. So my first traumatization was the morning, and I come down, and I can't find my car anywhere. And my second one was when the guy behind the counter said, "Well, we didn't know that was yours. It looked like a demo car." My third one was when I went over to the impound lot clear across the freeway. It only traveled about a quarter mile, but they gave me a $188 towing fine. So I figured, that's it, and I'm gritting my teeth, and I walk in, and a St. Paul copper had a ticket on the windshield for $88 more, so it didn't cost me about $300 to get. So I think $300 is probably a good amount.
Well, Representative Cornish, I have a question. Under your shoot 'em up bill, would the car be considered part of your extended homestead, so you were able to shoot the police and the taller?
No, repos are covered in towing and everything. But you know what? You got a good point. We're going to end up with about 20 minutes if we could bring that bill up.
Representative Paymer, I've been waiting, but I had a question, which occurred early. Is there a limit on how many days? I tried to find it in here quickly, and if I have my car towed and I don't go get it right away, can I get up to the $300, even though that may be, I may leave it for 2 weeks or something, before I get around to going down there? I didn't see anything limiting that in there. And it would seem to me that maybe we should put some requirement that they get down there pretty quick on.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently in state law, Minneapolis and St. Paul only have to keep the car for 15 days before they can get rid of it. Private towing companies have to keep it for 45. So if somebody leaves it longer than 15 days, the cities can get rid of it.
But I guess what I'm saying, Representative Paymer, is should we be paying if I'm in town, I get the call, and I just decide to leave it there, and I know about this law, can I just leave it there for a couple of weeks and then get paid if it only costs $300?
Mr. Chair, that one of the reasons, I don't know if that was totally the reason, but we originally had the cap at $500, and we reduced it to $300 based on some of the realistic fines that did happen. One of my constituents ended up paying $300 because they didn't know that it was in the impound lot. I guess I'd be happy to work on it. I don't know if that would make it more complicated for a consumer. I just wonder if a victim would say, "Well, geez, there's a law out there, and I can get $300, so I'll just wait a week before I go get my car." I don't know.
Representative Paymer, whether or not they knew of the law, if they didn't undertake to go down, I mean, if I get notice, I think if the state's paying for it, maybe I should have to get down there. That's something you can take up before the next committee. It looks like we're actually out of questions on this, what was considered, I think, an 8-minute bill, somebody said.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I'd renew my motion that
Representative Paymer, first we have to adopt your amendment So all in favor of the amendment to get it in the shape you wanted, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, now you can.
Then I would move House File 425 as amended to pass and be referred to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carries. We adjourn.